The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today's stories include federal help is on the way for college students affected by Hurricane Florence, and growth at light rail stations could generate big benefits. And we'll begin with federal help is on the way for college students affected by Hurricane Florence. College students affected by Hurricane Florence could be eligible for grants totaling $2.8 million that were announced Tuesday by the U.S. Department of Education. The grants would go to students who are deemed financially needy, with priority to those who are currently on Pell grants. The emergency money was made available by the Federal Supplemental Educational Opportunity Grant Program. Nearly $2 million will go to students in North Carolina and about $800,000 to students in South Carolina. The money is targeted at 38 community colleges and universities in counties designated for public assistance by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Our hearts go out to the thousands of students in North Carolina whose lives were impacted by Hurricane Florence, U.S. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos said in a news release announcing the grants. The department will continue to do all that it can do to assist students, faculty, and institutions in the Carolinas as they work to recover from the disaster. The grant money will go to 24 colleges and universities in eastern North Carolina. They are Beaufort County, Brunswick, Carteret, Craven, Fayetteville Technical, James Sprunt, Johnson, Central Carolina, Lenoir, Coastal Carolina, Pamlico, Pitt, Richmond, Sampson, Wayne, and Wilson Community Colleges. Fayetteville State University, Methodist University, Heritage Bible College, UNC Wilmington, East Carolina University, UNC Pembroke, University of Mount Olive, and Barton College. These grants are greatly needed and will go a long way in assisting students that can least afford to bear the devastating costs caused by Hurricane Florence, UNC President Margaret Spellings said in a statement Tuesday. We will continue to work with state and federal officials to ensure all of our affected students receive the support they need to recover in order to successfully continue their educational pursuits. And next, growth at light rail stations could generate big benefits. The jobs, affordable housing, and other community benefits Chapel Hill gains from the Durham Orange Light Rail Project will depend on local decisions made now, say Town and Go Triangle staff members. Our approach here in Chapel Hill is that if this transit investment is made, we want to make sure we have a chance to maximize the benefits for the community, said Ben Hitchings, the town's director of planning and development services. Hitchings and Go Triangle planner Patrick McDonough detailed one scenario for one of Chapel Hill's planned stations. With buildings up to 15 stories tall and a mix of business and recreation uses, to the Chapel Hill Town Council and the Orange County Board of Commissioners on Wednesday night. They gave a similar presentation to the Durham and Orange County commissioners in June. The $2.47 billion Durham-Orange Light Rail Transit Line would run from UNC Hospitals in Chapel Hill to NC Central University in Durham. Its 18 stations would link riders with future bus and rail routes across the triangle. The stations are expected to drive economic growth and provide or pay for community needs. Town officials have been working with Go Triangle, Gateway Planning Consultants, and the public since 2016, funded by a $2.1 million federal station development grant. The Gateway and Patterson Place stations, which hug Interstate 40 near the U.S. 15501 intersection, will be key to attracting jobs and companies, officials have said. Nearly 300 acres were identified as having redevelopment potential at both stations and at UNC Healthcare's nearby Easttown Office Park. Development there could create roughly $484 million in new property tax value over the next 40 years, financial estimates show. Although the Gateway Station area between the old Blue Cross and Blue Shield building and I-40 is in Chapel Hill, only a portion is in Orange County. However, it's still the county's best opportunity for economic development because five other planned Chapel Hill stations have limited land and are already developed or are owned by UNC. The remaining 12 stations are located in Durham County, and a 13th station in downtown Durham is under consideration. A Gateway Station concept plan presented Wednesday featured a compact, pedestrian-friendly mix of housing, businesses, and recreation opportunities. The core included 10 to 15-story buildings with 4- and 5-story residential and mixed-use buildings farther back from the highway and shorter townhomes closer to Old Durham Road. That plan would bring an estimated $59 million in new property tax value to Orange County by 2057, said McDonough, Go Triangle's manager of planning and transit-oriented development. At existing tax rates, the development would bring in just over $932,000 a year for Orange County, Chapel Hill, and the city schools. The portion of Gateway Station that lies in Durham County would generate an additional $130 million in new property value, he said. That would bring another $948,740 in annual tax revenues to Chapel Hill and the city schools, plus nearly $1.8 million to Durham County. The same benefit could be achieved with shorter but more densely constructed buildings, McDonough said. There are 1,000 possible futures at all stations, McDonough said. This is an attempt to capture one of them based on some of the things heard from the community and also based on market demand. Commissioner Earl McKee pointed out that $59 million is roughly the property tax value of a Wegmans grocery store or the factory that Japanese candy maker Morinaga built near Mebane. The Gateway Station tax estimates are conservative, McDonough said. The consultants also estimated the potential property tax impact of Easttown Office Park and Patterson Place Station. Easttown, the first phase of UNC Healthcare's redevelopment, was approved recently. The rest of the 48-acre medical park expansion is still in the planning stages, including a possible bridge or crossing connecting pedestrians to the Gateway Station area. Consultants estimated redeveloping Easttown as a privately owned campus could create $47 million in new Orange County property value, or roughly $743,000 each year in county, town, and school district tax revenues under current rates. However, UNC properties are considered publicly owned land and are not taxable. Mayor Pam Heminger said the town would negotiate any future property taxes with UNC, whose officials have agreed to payments, including at Easttown. Patterson Place. This station area, including the shopping center and adjacent land, offers Durham City and County roughly 153 acres for potential redevelopment, consultants said. The resulting neighborhood could have a huge effect on Durham's tax base at an estimated $248 million in new property value over the next 40 years. That amounts to nearly $3.4 million a year in new tax revenues using current Durham County and city tax rates. Chapel Hill already is incorporating ideals of transit-oriented development, growth within walking distance of public transportation, into its planning. The ongoing Charting Our Future project will influence decisions about the town's growth through 2049. The county commissioners who have repeatedly pressed Go Triangle for a voice in station development asked to keep the conversation going with Chapel Hill. Certainly, we know it's your jurisdiction, your zoning, but we want to be at the table with you helping and advising to make sure that what we signed on the dotted line happens, Commissioner Penny Rich said. It's the county that's risking the money, and we know that economic development is one of the ways that we can make this really successful, especially for affordable housing and money for schools. The Durham Orange Light Rail Transit project is in the final stages of engineering and could be submitted to the Federal Transit Administration later this year. If a federal grant is approved, construction could begin in 2020, with the service launching in 2028. The federal government is expected to cover up to half of the light rail line's $2.47 billion construction cost. Another $190 million, or 7.7%, could come from the state, and private donations are being sought for just over $102 million. Durham and Orange counties would pick up the remaining $945.5 million in local cost, $796 million from Durham and $149.5 million from Orange, plus an estimated $847 million to $908 million in interest on debt. Go Triangle is paying the local cost with proceeds from a half-cent transit sales tax and car rental and registration fees. The final cost of any debt would depend on several factors, including interest rates and when the debt is issued, Go Triangle spokesman Mike Charbonneau said. And next, Amazon's $15 hourly wage likely to have ripple effect. After years of sluggish pay gains, the economy may be starting to work for America's low-wage workers. Amazon's announcement Tuesday that it will raise its minimum wage to $15 an hour will intensify pressure on other companies to lift their pay levels as well. Among the most likely to do so, Amazon's rival retailers and warehouse operators, many of which are facing the prospect of staff shortages as they ramp up for the holiday shopping season. This is going to be a big deal for very low-wage workers, said Ben Zipper, an economist at the Liberal Economic Policy Institute. It's going to compel other businesses to raise wages as well. Low-wage workers typically receive higher pay from an expanding economy only after higher-income people have benefited, economists note. Now, with the unemployment rate near a 50-year low and the number of job openings exceeding the number of unemployed, more lower-income Americans are finally receiving meaningful raises. Low-paid workers get kicked the most in the recession, and they generally benefit more later in the boom, said David Newmark, an economist at University of California, Irvine. Accordingly, retailers who employ a sizable share of the nation's lower-paid workers have been stepping up pay increases. Average hourly wages for retail workers, excluding managers, rose 4% in August compared with 12 months earlier. Amazon's announcement will likely embolden labor activists and unions that have been pressing large fast food and retail chains to raise pay, provide more reliable work schedules, and allow for union representation. Among the critics Amazon has faced over its pay and work conditions, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont has noted that some of its workers receive food stamps and other benefits that are geared for the poor, while its owner Jeff Bezos has become the world's wealthiest person. Now that activists have succeeded, they can now take that demand to other employers, said Marshall Steinbaum, a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute. You can say you can't afford this, but your competitor obviously can. Indeed, shares of retail companies fell sharply Tuesday in a sign that investors expect them to have to raise pay to compete with Amazon, a step that would potentially slow their profits. Best Buy's share price dropped nearly 5%. Kohl's stores fell 3.9%. Amazon, the world's largest online retailer, also said Tuesday that it will lobby to raise the federal minimum wage from $7.25 an hour, though it did not say what figure it would push for. The impact of a higher federal wage, though, would likely be modest, because more than 20 states have minimum wages above the federal level. The higher federal minimum wage could intensify pressures on smaller businesses that don't have the financial resources that Amazon has to raise pay significantly. Historically, large companies have been a driving factor in pushing up the minimum wage, Steinbaum said. Once they start to raise pay in response to competitive forces, they typically lobby to push others to follow suit to prevent other companies from undercutting them. Darren Moscato, who owns an express staffing agency in Buffalo, New York, where Amazon has built a warehouse, said the higher pay offered by Amazon will make it harder for local businesses to compete for workers. Moscato noted that smaller companies typically spend more on labor than does Amazon, which uses more automation. This is why Amazon is also pushing for a higher national minimum wage, Moscato said. It will give them a competitive advantage. Other retailers and shipping companies are likely to feel the brunt of Amazon's decision as well, an analyst said. The pay increases would apply to about 100,000 Amazon seasonal workers. That's equal to roughly 16% of the 623,800 retail jobs that the economy added in October and November last year. We've already seen just how much pressure there is. I think this is only going to increase it, said Judy Conte, Director of Government Affairs at the National Employment Law Project. An advocate for higher minimum wages, Conte added that Amazon would likely benefit if $15 an hour became the new baseline. Any small businesses that compete with larger companies by providing better service rather than by matching every price cut should also manage fine, she said. Companies like UPS, FedEx, and XPO Logistics typically hire tens of thousands of seasonal workers to meet the crushing demands of online shopping during the winter holidays. Amazon plans to add 100,000, many of them at the higher $15 wage, which takes effect November 1st. The crisis in warehouse and shipping personnel is very real, and there's going to be a meaningful increase in wages to attract and increase talent, said Steve Barr, consumer markets leader at PwC. The next article comes from Time magazine and is by Stuart Weiss. How to help your kids get a great education and not go broke. High school students are now back to classes, resuming the quest for a college education and the good life beyond. But it seems too many of them are mortgaging their futures to get there. At $1.4 trillion, student loans now represent the second largest pile of total household debt, topped only by mortgages. For parents hoping to provide their children with more bountiful lives than their own, that should be a warning. College is still a good income-boosting strategy. And, for example, a recent study of the University of Texas system found that 3 years after graduation, bachelor's degree holders earned almost twice as much as their high school graduate peers. But if you have to make a large monthly loan payment for the decade, are you really getting ahead? Some measures say no. There is growing evidence that ballooning student loan debt is slowing the progress of college graduates toward other features of the American dream, getting married, buying a car or a home, or even just moving out of their parents' place. Part of the explanation for these trends is simply that there is less money left over after the monthly student loan payment is made, but home and auto purchases are also likely affected by the damaged credit rating of those who get behind on student loan payments. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York estimates that, shockingly, approximately 22% of student loans in the repayment phase are more than 90 days delinquent or in default. All of this is consistent with recent studies showing that millennials are doing worse than their baby boomer parents did at the same stage of life. This is the too often ignored story of college life. How can parents help their children reach a much happier fate? Here are a few suggestions. Start early. Long before high school, have serious discussions with your children about college cost and financing. This should be an essential part of their basic financial education about work, spending, savings, and debt. If you want to establish realistic goals, the junior year of high school may be too late to have these conversations. Encourage action. Even if you are lucky enough to be able to cover your child's entire college education, but especially if you're not, require that they open a savings account and work part-time and have summer jobs to cover some of the cost, books, fees, spending money, and the like. Giving young people an early understanding of the value of work will help them appreciate the cost of debt after college. Multiple studies show that young people who are low on financial literacy make poor borrowing decisions. Downplay prestige. Insist on colleges that you and your student can afford. There is some evidence that students who graduate from more selective colleges earn higher salaries, although the data are far from clear. But the effect of college prestige is dwarfed by the impact of major. The state school engineering graduate will almost always command a substantially higher starting salary than the private college psychology major. Stay local. Over the past 40 years, in-state public college costs have varied between 38% and 45% of the price of private colleges. To further save on cost, some students may choose to start at a local community college and transfer to the state university. No matter how you do it, there is no better bargain for a traditional college education than your state university system. Create goals. Make an agreement with your child that graduating debt-free or with minimum debt is an important goal. Washington Post financial columnist Michelle Singletary recently reported that by living below their means, investing in tax-advantaged college savings plans, and choosing state schools, she and her husband were able to send all three of their children off to college debt-free. Not everyone has the benefit of a personal finance expert in the family, but in the U.S., a high-quality, low-debt college education is still possible for most middle-class families who make the right decisions. Don't let your kids overpay and put the rest on a credit card. They'll thank you for it later. And next, PolitiFact. Critical of Phelps's claim and calls it mostly false. The candidates in Senate District 1 are sparring over health care costs as State Representative Bob Steinberg is calling out his opponent, Washington County Commissioner Cole Phelps, for making what he claims are false attacks on his record. Steinberg, a Republican from Shawan, is also pointing to an article by an independent fact checker to back up his claim. For its part, Phelps's campaign says the candidate is sticking to its claim about Steinberg's record. The dispute started when Phelps, a Democrat, posted on Facebook last month that health care premiums in North Carolina are now among the five highest in the country and accused Steinberg of protecting insurance companies' profits and not his constituents. PolitiFact NC, the group that investigates political ads and politicians' claims for accuracy, rated Phelps's claim in an October 2nd article as mostly false. And next, NC judge shuts down tree removal company accused of price gouging after Hurricane Florence. A Superior Court judge temporarily shut down a tree service that quoted a Wilmington woman a $4,000 price for cleanup following Hurricane Florence, but charged a $12,000 bill. The state attorney general's office sought and received a preliminary injunction Monday against A1 Tree and Storm Relief from Lexington, also known as Big A1, arguing that the business engaged in price gouging with customers made vulnerable by the devastating storm. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.